Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and this is Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Yesterday was Deepavali, and we had a discussion about Deepavali then. Today, we continue with the spirit of Deepavali. The light still burns inside of me, and we're going to be looking at the Indian experience tonight. And to help me with that, I have Uthaya Sankar SB, as well as Tanusha Shanmuganathan. They're both members of a group called Kavyan. And Kavyan is a group of Indian writers, meaning writers of Indian descent who are Malaysian, who write mostly in Bahasa Malaysia. They're both novelists in their own right, or short story writers. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. Where do we begin? There is this issue of what it is to be Indian in Malaysia. We often understand as an ethnic category, and in fact, there's been some confusion just this last couple of days, you know, with politicians greeting Malaysians, saying to all Indian Malaysians, you know, happy Deepavali. And people have been pushing back and saying, well, actually, you got it wrong. You know, Deepavali is essentially a Hindu festival, it's a religious festival. So help us understand this. There's a lot of confusion, and the confusion comes from within the Indian, so-called Indian community itself. Yes. What is it to be an Indian?
Okay, see, to go back to your question earlier, because 80%, roughly about 80% of Malaysian Indians are Tamil, and we tend to categorize everybody as Tamil. Mm-hmm. And since more than 80% are Hindus, we tend to think that Indian equals to Hindu, and we tend to say Salam Hari Raya, Deepavali, to semua India. That's where the confusion starts. Even this happens also among the Indians themselves. But we must also understand we have Hindus, Christians, Buddhists, and also Muslims among our Indians.
And also Indians are made up of different ethno-linguistic groups, right?
Exactly.
So it's actually a huge category. Yes. That we've turned into a race. Tanusha, you growing up, how did you identify yourself? Did you use the broad category of Indian? Did you use a subcategory? How do you describe yourself?
Okay, I guess in school it was like, okay, Indians. Then I slowly realized that when my parents were talking about it, it was like, we're Slonis. But I don't really like go out there and say, oh, you know what, I'm Slonis. Now it's like when I started writing in Malay, I was like, okay, you know what, I don't care about Indians, I'm Malaysian.
That's interesting, because that's partly what your group is trying to do as well. But before we get into that, what other ways can we understand Indianness in this country? Are we looking essentially at culture? Are we looking at language? Because people like myself, though I'm of Malayali, descent, as it were, mm-hmm. So are you, Uday, yes. I understand. Okay. I don't speak the language. Mm-hmm. And so because English is my first language, do I cease to be Indian of some sort? I mean, where does Indianness begin and end, Uday?
Yeah, we talk about being diverse, the diversity. And if you look at the Indian culture itself, maybe the language, food, dance, drama, everything is it's too many things that we can look into. So we don't have to worry, and you don't have to worry about whether you're an Indian or not, no matter which language you speak or whichever is your mother tongue, as long as it's in you. See, technically it'll still come out as an Indian. Not being racist, but whenever you look at something, you will have the view of an Indian. It comes out automatically.
Okay, what is an Indian view then?
I mean, basically, for me, it's like you can't take Indian out of you. It's there. It's just like you don't have to say it all the time. I'm Indian, I'm Indian. You don't have to justify it. It's there. It comes out when you don't expect it, but it's just there.
I think one thing that's clear for me is that whatever my self-identification is, or however I identify myself, people's views of me are shaped by how they think of, you know, and they look at me and they say, well, you're typical, Indian, right?
There's always that stereotype of Indians.
Yeah, and it's not a bad stereotype, not necessarily a negative stereotype, but it comes from external, views of us. And also, of course, bureaucratically, an Indian gets, you mark that
you
little box,
mark,
and
exactly.
I always resent it, but I mark it nevertheless. Mm-hmm. How do we go from ascribing these identities to ourselves to something broader is, as Tanusha was saying, wanting to understand yourself as Malaysian.
Yes.
Does that really mean, is it a meaningful category, do you think?
I am Malaysian because I was born in Malaysia, so I am Malaysian. So why do we have to go like, oh, I'm Indian or Chinese or whatever?
But what about Indian Malaysian or Malaysian Indian? Do you use that kind of expression?
It's generally the same thing. I mean, I rarely use it anymore. It's like, ever since I became a writer, it's like, no.
Okay, so becoming a writer has changed like, how you've used that. Indian, Malaysian, Malaysian, Indian?
That's a long debate, and I just go by Malaysian, Indian, which is easier for me to say.
What is the debate then?
The debate is, no, you're an Indian first, then you're a Malaysian. And some say, no, you're born as a Malaysian, then you're Indian. See, the debate can go on. It's not going to take us anywhere. But as long as we know that we are Malaysians, Anusha mentioned, you see, we don't go around saying, oh, we are Indian writers. You see, we are writers.
Yes.
Even on my Facebook, it says I'm a Malaysian writer on my blog. We don't go around saying we are Indian writers. But see, people see the uniqueness in us and we say, oh, Tanusha, your Indian dress looks beautiful. That's a compliment, actually. Or people might say, oh, you can portray the Indianness in your poem, in your short story, your novel. That's something positive. Problem is when people make it stereotype and put it in a very much racist manner.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so Uday is around my generation. I mean, he's substantially younger than me, but still closer to me than he is to perhaps your generation.
Yep.
Do you think, Tanusha, there is a generational shift as well that's going on, that increasingly people don't necessarily identify themselves, you know, as Indian, and people who are, in fact, technically Indian or bureaucratically concerned Indian?
Okay. There's a thing like some people don't want to admit they're Indian, probably because they are Indian, but then, okay, this is kind of an identity crisis, in my opinion. Okay, the thing is, I've never actually paid attention to those things. It's like, who cares about race? Like, why make it everything a racial issue? It's we're who we are. We know who we are. So
okay. Yeah. So identity crisis. Do you think the younger Malaysian Indians, if to the extent that they discard Indianness as something that helps define them, are they in crisis? Are they losing out if they kind of say, oh, it doesn't really matter?
Yeah, I think we have heard from what Tanusha, the younger generation, has said. It brings back to the issue of is it because they really don't care, or is it that they don't know? At times, based on my experience meeting younger generation of Indians, they don't know much about Indian culture or their religion or their identity. So they're in a dilemma. They don't know how should I identify myself, or some don't speak Tamil or their mother tongue. So and they speak more English at home, and they fail to identify themselves with the Indianness. So you see, we understand Tanusha's point of view, being the younger generation. At the same time, we have Indians who fail to identify or to realize the uniqueness of being an Indian.
Is there a uniqueness in being Indian in Malaysia, Tanusha?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of things that we can proudly say we're Indian, like in our food, in our clothes. I mean, you don't
but
get
But is that superficial? I mean, you know, the clothing, the food, I mean, all of which are very nice, especially during festive seasons, you know, but is there something more substantial than that?
I mean, our customs especially, like, okay, each of our customs are special in a way that some of them may be similar with other races, but then, like, we do have some stuff that some of our cultures, which are very, very unique, that other cultures don't have it.
And that's so important, that other cultures don't have what we have.
That's
You are doing something quite interesting with Perbadanan Adat Melayu and Warisan Negeri Selangor and Museum Sultan Alam Shah, which is about creating a history of Indians in Selangor, very specific to the state. In the little time that we have before we have to go for a break, tell me, what is it that you're trying to do? Are you trying to educate people about Indians and their contribution to the state?
No, you see, the museum in Selangor, they want to gather information about the people in Selangor. They've been trying very hard, but so far, they haven't had enough information about the Indians. So they've given me the task to contact Indians in Selangor or throughout Malaysia who can give information about Malaysians in
Indians in Selangor?
In Selangor, yes.
Selangor, specifically Selangor.
Because, well, they want to gather information.
And has information been coming in? Is there something?
It's very, very slow. It's very saddening. It's very slow because there's so many things that you see, if you look at Selangor, Indians in Malaysia, we have majority of them in Selangor. And they are very much involved in, let's say, drama, theatre, or writing, or the involvement in the agriculture and the estates.
Is history important to you, Tanusha?
Of course, that's what our story, it's our story that to tell. I mean, that's how we exist because of history. So yes, that's where our origins are from.
Okay, so we're going to come back to a little bit about that. And I agree with both of you, the history is very important. We're going to be looking deeper at the work that Kavyan does as an organization and how you can sustain a literature using these parameters. And the parameters we're going to be talking about. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Patton. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. We're talking about the Indian experience tonight, and I'm very lucky to have Dr. M. Shanmugalingam. He is the Managing Director of Trilogic Sanyam Bahad, and of course, more importantly, he's the author of a book, a recently published book called Marriage and Mutton Curry. Very evocative, because we all can almost smell mutton curry as soon as the expression is used. Thank you so much, Shan, for joining us this evening. I want to ask you how important understanding history is, the history of, in the case of your book and your work, the Sinhalese or the Jaffna Tamils. How important is that in shaping the stories that you wrote?
It's central, Sharad. I've chosen 15 stories, 9 previously published but rewritten, and 6 new ones, longer, darker, deeper maybe. They focus on 3 most significant periods in the history of Malaysia and Singapore: the British colonial period, the Japanese occupation, and the early years of independence. And the subset of the Indian community that I'm looking at are the Jaffna Tamils, who dominated the clerical service during the latter part of British Malaya through the Japanese occupation and early post-independence. But while on the surface, they appear to be different, they have 3 major features in common, namely language, religion, and culture. We talk about the Indians as a community, but as we are aware, the vast majority of the Indian subcontinent in population in Malaysia are Tamils. So the Jaffna and the South Indian Tamils have language, religion, and culture in common.
If I can interrupt you at this point in time,
yes,
I mean,
please.
Do you think the stories that appeal to you, the stories that you have written, are a function of your generation and the concerns of your generation?
In some respects, yes. But the format, the genre, the short story, I think appeals even more to the younger generation with their short attention span. And many of us are traveling frequently by LRT, by bus, by plane, by car. So on each trip, we can read one short story. So while the concern may be of a slightly earlier generation, the format, the genre, the structure appeals even more to the younger community. So it's straddling intergenerationally.
Do you think that over time, this attachment to where we came from as Indians, you know, to the subcontinent, to, you know, Sri Lanka and so on and so forth, those attachments will wear away?
Yes, they will. And Sultan Nasreddin in his Royal Foreword put it very well. He said, while the stories appear on the surface to be about the Jaffna Tamil community, the insights they provide are on the human condition and go well beyond the experience of any one ethnic group. They illuminate universal emotions, struggles, and relationships, cutting across the experience of any one group to speak to us all. So I think the Jaffna Tamils are merely the vehicle to talk about really Malaysians of all kinds. These are lower middle class government clerks who, via education and very hard work, send their children to universities, and they moved into the professions, doctors, lawyers, engineers, within one generation. So while Malaysians are obsessed with race and religion, this is also about another category, class, clerks, wanting their children to have upward mobility.
Mm-hmm. There are, of course, a number of writers, in fact, a huge number of writers who have been expressing the Indian condition, as it were, the diasporic condition in the English language. The Rice Mother by Rani Manika is one that comes to mind. She's a Malaysian, was written also about the Jaffna Tamils.
Yes.
Do you see yourself as part of that genre of writing about the Indian experience, but for a global audience using the English language?
Yes, I feel the challenge to me is not to be a jago kampong, not to just appeal to people in KL or people in Malaya or Malaysia, but to reach out to a wider audience, although my primary audience will, of course, be Malaysian.
Thank you so much, Shan. That was M. Shanmugalingam, author of Marriage and Mutton Curry. Have either of you read this book? Not to put you both on the spot. I haven't, so I. But I, have you?
Looking forward to it.
Why are you looking forward to it?
Okay, partly because I want to know about Jaffna. Yes, because I am Slanis, definitely.
So it's a kind of a co-ethnic feeling.
Yeah, when I heard about the book, it was like when it was about Jaffna, then it kind of like got back to like, okay, my grandfather was there, my dad told me a lot of stories about Jaffna, and also so then I said like, okay, could be interesting.
Do you think that feeling of an attachment, you know, the attachment to your own group, that still is very strong, and that can be used to mobilize people to read stories, you know, or cultural works by saying, well, you know, this is really about our stories, our stories.
See, earlier I did mention the uniqueness, which we should appreciate. It comes back in Tanusha. Yeah. See, as a writer, when we write about Indian culture, or we put that in our creative writing, and it's written in Bahasa Malaysia, the Indians would say, wow, something is written about Indian culture, maybe about Malayalam culture, or Tamil culture, Punjabi culture, or Telugu culture, or Jaffna culture. It's written in Bahasa Malaysia. They feel proud. And as for the non-Indians, Chinese, Malays, they feel that, hey, we get a chance to read something different about people, Indian culture, or Indian way of life, Indian problems in Bahasa Malaysia.
No, I'm wondering about this, and you know, this is the stated aim, which is to reach out to other communities, to get other people with different experiences and share experiences. But do we know exactly who is reading these works that are produced, say in Bahasa Malaysia, and the kind of responses to them? I know these are some of your books, and you write under a pen name, Mira Natasha. Why Mira Natasha? It's very exotic sounding.
It's actually Sanskrit plus Greek, which means rebirth and prosperity.
Oh, that's profound.
I actually choose names for my characters or my, you know, my pen name, I do my research and go for like something with meaning. So this was like a time when I was actually really down, kind of depressed, I guess. So
it's the condition of many a writer. Yeah.
Rubbing. This is the book that gave me identity, an identity. So like I thought I want something new, to just, or you could call it like an alter ego. So it's like it's both of us are different.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But coming back to the question of pride and ethnic pride or ethno-linguistic pride. I mean, in the case of many of these groups we're talking about, it. Why is that still, do you think, such a profoundly powerful emotion, this in-group feeling?
You see, let's make it clear that under Kumpulan Sastra and Kavin, the Kavin Writers Group, we write in Bahasa Malaysia, but we also encourage our members to be writing in other languages, maybe Tamil, English, and we have discussion among writers, Indian writers who write in different languages, and also discussion, get together with other writers, Malaysian writers. So please do not get it wrong. It's not ethnocentric. It's not only Indians. We diverse.
Well, you were one of the founder members of this.
Yes.
Tanusha, were you one of the founder members?
No. I was new.
Okay, so why were you attracted to the group then?
Okay, the thing is, I first met Udaya related to my book. I mean, I was a journalist at Malaysian Insider, so I met him there. Then I found out about Kavian. It was okay. I was working towards becoming a writer then, and then I was like, okay, there's a group that actually, protects writers, to actually promotes writers, Malaysian writers. So I was like, okay, let's go for one event. It was an accident, actually. I just went for an event and okay, I got hooked.
And the fact that it was kind of mono-ethnic was not a problem for you?
Actually, Kavin wasn't just about Indians. It was supposed to be for Malaysian writers. Somehow it became mono, I'm not sure why.
Maybe why did it become mono-ethnic with that?
It's not mono. I have to stress that. Even our committee members are not really Indians. The whole idea is to portray, to show, to prove that the Malay literature world in Malaysia also consists of Malaysian Indian writers who are also contributing.
So I think the Peranakan and Chinese writers of the turn of the century also contributed a lot to the development of...
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's why during our discussions, we don't only talk about Indian writers. Yeah. We invite others to talk about their experience. So it's an exchange of ideas, experiences.
Indians, Malays and Chinese as well.
Okay. Well, very good. On that note, we'll come back to a deeper look at the stories that are told through the Indian experience. Stay tuned for that. Let's talk with me, Sharad Pitton. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Pitton. With me, Tanusha Shanmugathan and Uthai Sankar SB, both members of a group of writers called themselves Kavian. And we're going to ask them to explain that shortly, because I have Uthai here. Tell me, what is Kavian? What does it mean?
Okay, Kavian is a Sanskrit and Malayalam word, which means writers, literary writers.
Okay. And your group is actually technically called Kumpulan Sastrawan Kavian.
Kavian, yes.
So it's
Kavian Writers Group.
Kavian Writers Group. So it's Writers Group.
Yes. Oh,
okay. It's a bit...
You got that.
Okay. It's a bit of a redundancy. Now, I've been stalking you on your blog posts and reading some of your stuff. Munshi Abdullah, of course, well-known to most, Malaysian students, they would have come across his writings. You actually say he is the earliest Indian writer, but not often acknowledged. What is the pushback on that? Is he an Indian writer? Is he an Indian writer? What's an Indian writer?
Okay. See, we look at his name, Munshi Abdullah, as the father of modern Malay literature. But we tend to forget that he's a Tamilian. Okay, he's a Tamilian. We call it Jawi Peranakan. He was the first to write modern Malay literature, which has been accepted by all. And it's interesting to know that his father is a Tamil scholar. And he learned... his father was around to teach Tamil to the Malay royals in Malacca in the ancient time. And Munshi Abdullah learned Malay and he started writing in Malay, the modern Malay. And he brought about the modern way of writing in Malay. But we tend to forget that he's actually Indian.
So he's Tamilian. And maybe Indian, the word, even the notion of Indianness during his period wouldn't have existed.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Munshi Abdullah emerge in your own education? Did you know about him? Did you ever think about his origins?
We did hear about him, but I only discovered his writings, I guess, in my secondary school. Primary, maybe not, but even literature was in my late secondary
years. Right, okay. Did you know about his mother? Because you say his father was a Tamilian, but was his mother a Tamilian?
I'm not really aware of it.
Mother was a Malay.
Was a Malay. So that's where he gets his Malay identity.
It's interesting that if you look at history, many male from India, Tamil Nadu especially, they come to Malaya and they marry local Malay ladies. That's why we have the Chetty community, another uniqueness of the Indian community in Malacca.
Right. Okay, so we have all these hybrid communities and, people intermarry and it's created some wonderful cultural expressions. Now, if you don't take Munshi Abdullah as the first Indian writer writing in Malay, then the next person comes around the 1930s, doesn't he? This was in your own blog post.
Okay.
But since then, there has been an explosion I don't know if explosion is the right word. There has been a development of writing by Indians or ethnic Indians in the Malay language. Tell us a little bit about the trajectory of that.
Okay, in the 30s, we had one, Nagalingam, but we don't know whether he's really an Indian or it's a Malay writer using a pen name. We wouldn't know. But we just think, okay, he's an Indian. After the 30s, there was a vacuum. Until 60s, we have Joseph Silverman and a few other writers. Especially after 70, when the term Bahasa Malaysia was introduced, there were a lot of campaigning to encourage Malaysians of different ethnic to use the language. And we had Joseph Selvam and a few others who started writing in Tamil and also in Bahasa Malaysia. And in the 80s, we had the merge of the new writers, Saroja Devi, Balakrishna, Ratna Devi, Sri Valli. And in the 90s, 2000, we have Tanusha, we have Mahendran, so many of them.
Right, okay. So it's not only, as I understand it, Indian writers or ethnic Indian writers who've tried to capture the Indian experience. We've had quite a number of others. Abdullah Hussein, because was a national laureate, wrote a novel in 1971, Interlock, right? And so that also tries to convey the experience of the migrant community, Indians being one of them. Mm-hmm. But it got into quite a bit of controversy. What is your take on Interlock? I mean, have you read the novel? I believe it was a secondary school text, wasn't it?
Actually, it wasn't in my time.
Wasn't in your time.
Wasn't in my time. But then I am familiar with the book. The thing is that one word kind of caused a controversy.
And the word killing was used, right?
Yeah. Okay. Killing, fire, that kind of thing. So, it was like everyone was saying it was wrong, it was negative. Okay, I did take a bit of offense those days when I knew what the word was. And then, but now it's like, I don't know why people make a big deal of it right now. Still, is that sentiment is there still.
Okay, like, so people were hurt by it.
Yes.
But I don't really want to kind of, but I believe you came out.
I was in the panel.
You were in the panel, which panel?
The official panel to make the amendments.
To make the amendments to novel.
Yes.
Do you think novels should be amended by committees?
You see, that's a question as well. You see, the amendment is to be done to the abridged version. It was already abridged, you see. That's why people say, hey, Utaya, why must it be edited? I say, it has already been edited.
Right, abridged because it was being used as a school text.
Okay. Yes.
Now, without going back to that controversy, and I think we could spend a whole show
on that
controversy, is something I think quite controversial that you say in one of your blog posts out there. You say that that Indians do appear in the novels written by a number of writers, but they don't have a kind of Indian-ness in it. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, and you make a claim for the writers of Kavyan that not only have they now, are they creating characters that are Indian, that are true to Indianness, but you say that they're also creating Malay Muslim characters that are very much Malay Muslim and Chinese characters that are very much Chinese. What special magic does this group of Kavyan writers have that they can enter into the experience of so many other groups and so many other people?
You see, of course, that's based on my own experience and meeting with other writers. You see, when we read a novel or a short story written by a Malay, especially about Indian character, the character might sound Indian by name. It's Rama Sami or Muniamma.
Yes.
But when you look at the story, the soul is not Indian. It could be a Chinese, it could be a Malay. And the lifestyle is very much Malay. Only the names are Indian names. Where else when Indian writers, Kavyan writers, or even Tamil writers, when they portray a Malay character, they go deep, they understand the culture, the view of the character, and we are able to. It's magic, I would say.
Oh, okay. Is it magic or training, or is it kind of empathy? What's happening here? Because I can't believe it's magic.
No, for me, because I write Malay novels using Indian characters. Thing is, when I first started reading Malay novels, Malay writers have been writing about their own religion, their own culture. So the first question that I asked was, why not I write about my own culture? So that's how I got involved in writing about my own culture. And yeah, okay, when I write about Indians, it's like I want to portray my, for instance, in one of my books, I have about marriage. So the aspects of marriage, there are different things, especially in Indian marriage, that not everyone knows, like when they actually tie the tali, the three knots. There are meanings to those things that I did my research on, and trying to share with them. So there are things that when we write those things, we can like put ourselves as an Indian in there. So I'm trying to like give a new breath of life to my characters.
So that, okay. There was also another criticism that you leveled against Indian writers, ethnic Indian writers writing in Malay, who when writing in Malay, felt they needed to inhabit the world of the Malay Muslim exclusively. I mean, they didn't know how to, as you put it, separate language from religion and culture. What was happening in their minds, you think?
See, we get confused. Some writers think that since I'm writing in Malay, I'm supposed to write about Malays for the Malay readers. Of course, we have majority Malay readers.
Yeah. But people who write in English have no such problem, by the way.
No such problem, But actually, in Bahasa Malaysia, the problem is an imagined problem. When the readers that I meet, even Pak Samad and Osman Putih, they say that we love reading your stories about Indian, the Indian culture in Bahasa Malaysia. And our Malay readers are so much into Hindi movies or Tamil movies now. Mm-hmm. And they find it so interesting to be able to read it in Bahasa Malaysia. Yeah. And the mistake is actually done by the Indian writers themselves, who think that, oh, since I'm writing in Malay, I must write about Malays for the Malay community.
Is it about the community, is it about markets? I mean, is there a reality for Indian writers wanting to appeal to the majority of in the market?
The market. You want to get your book sold. That's a typical stereotyping that goes on. You want to get your book sold, you write for the mass market. You don't think about if you're going to write for just the minority. You write, like for me, I just write, it's okay if my book doesn't get a bestseller title or something, because I'm sharing my stuff. I want to get my stories out there.
Okay. Right. Yeah. But okay, but the market does have an impact on writing, do you think, there?
Yeah, but I would say generally Malaysian readers, they don't care whether you're an Indian writer, or Malay writer, whether you're writing about Indian culture. As long as it's good, they can enjoy it. And people want something different. You see, when we read in English, we don't want to be reading the same stuff over and over again. Yes. We want diversity. We want something different, something new. And that can also be done in our Bahasa Malaysia literature. And that's what we are doing.
The reason I got into writing about my own culture was, this was kind of a challenge given to me by one of my university lecturers. She told me, I want to see you writing about your own culture in Malay novels, in novels. That's when I started, thinking,
but to what extent do you want to be involved in writing, like cultural pamphlets, explaining and being pedagogical, educating people about the niceties of your culture?
Actually, it's not about educationing them, but then it's like you weave those things into the story. You tell the story, but you don't, it's not like, we're not going to preach to them. We're not preaching, we're not here to...
It's not a guide to...
It's not a guide or anything. It's just like, okay, look, my character is getting married. This is what they do at marriage. It's like telling them, showing them. It's like they have the show, don't tell, that kind of thing. So it's like I'm showing them, this is what we do in our Indian culture. I'm not trying to preach or trying to get you to convert into Hindu or whatever. It's like, I'm just telling a story. If you want to read it, read it.
Right. I think, again, we keep saying Indian. We're using that term very liberally. The definitions that we had earlier in the show have kind of disappeared. But okay, we'll come back to another tricky question, which is about women. And, whether Indian writers who are men can create authentic female characters in their work. And you, of course, as a woman writer, how do you feel about creating male characters as well? We're going to come back to that after this. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me is Aisanka SB. He's a writer and also a founder member of Kavian, as a group of writers promoting the use of Bahasa Malaysia, but not solely, not exclusively among ethnic Indian writers, but that seems to be part of the character of the group. Also with me tonight, Tanusha Shanmuganathan. She's a novelist and a member of Kavian. I do want to mention that my mother's a writer, and this is a book that she's just published, and I'm promoting it, as it were, on this show only because we want to talk about women's writers. And I think what I've learned over the years is that there is a gendered perspective. And, whether you're talking about an ethnic experience like the Indian experience, there's also a gender dimension to it. And, Shanmugalingam earlier, who's the author of Marriage and Mutton Curry, talked about the class perspective, right? So Is there a strong sense of being a woman in the characters that you create, Tanusha?
Okay, yeah, of course, because I'm all for women empowerment. So in this society, the 21st century, so a lot of my stories depict strong women. I don't want to just depict them as a weak, weakling. Like, hey, we have already gone, we have like women astronauts in India and all those things. So why not, like, you know, empower them? Do not make them weak. Women can do anything that's like equal.
Anything that a man can do.
But
in terms of characters, I mean, you obviously as a writer, the world is populated by men and women and all kinds of people. Do you find it difficult to inhabit the world of a man? I mean, to create male characters?
Nope, because I grew up with a lot of men, boys. Most of my cousins are guys, boys. So I guess I grew up watching them.
You have a
them.
Window onto their souls.
Kind of. I don't know, because I have a lot of my friends who are guys, so I love mingling with them and, you know, I'm getting to know them. I write what I observe. So I look at them and I'm like, okay, this is how a guy should be. I have like a visions of what each of my heroes should look like, should be. And, you know, I don't have a problem like, okay, I want to write a guy, so my references are wide. I have a load of references out there.
With the question of whether, men can inhabit the skin of women and vice versa, and or do people of different ethnic groups inhabit each other's skins? I mean, I think Tanusha pointed a very interesting fact that, you know, as a writer, you have to be observant, right?
Exactly.
Do you think male writers in Malaysia have largely failed to understand the gendered dimension of the Indian experience?
Well, I can't speak on behalf of all the other writers, but from my experience, since you asked the question, my first story, which won an award, the first prize, title is Nayagi, which means heroine.
Yeah.
And the main character is a woman. And it talks about some of the line which says that if you are looking for the freedom of a country, you must first look at the freedom of a woman. So the women emancipation is there. So from my experience, I have portrayed the character, the female character. There are also other stories like Doa Tahun Baru, where a child looks at the mother figure. So portrays the mother as Goddess Lakshmi with many arms because the mother is able to do multitask.
But is that a stereotype as well? I mean, you know, that women are goddesses, they are this, they're that, you know, they put on the pedestal. Because that's a cultural stereotype that also is very constraining for women, isn't it, Tanusha?
Yeah, I mean, they used to say like women belong in the kitchen, men belong at work, that kind of thing.
Okay, so that's one stereotype.
Yeah.
But doesn't necessarily elevate women, as he was saying, as mother goddess.
But I also wrote a story called Wanita, Women, where the whole idea is about why do Indian women start using their husband's name once they get married? So that's entirely different. Yeah. It's 180 degree. From my earlier stories.
Those days, women used to believe that men were gods. Like, you know, everything their husbands say or men says goes, that kind of thing. So I guess it became like, I think, I don't know who believes it now. But then for me, it's like, the equal rights thing comes in. It's like...
Okay. Do you write consciously for women, Indian women, in your writings?
No, not for Indian, just Indians. I'm writing for everyone, Malaysians.
All right,
everyone,
okay.
Yeah.
But women don't matter as a group?
Actually, I'm not writing just for women. It's for men as well. Because I have another book that's upcoming, which is depicting on a male point of view. So I'm not just writing for one group. Mine's going to be universal. Instead of just focusing on one gender, it would be unfair to just separate the men from the women if I write just one.
Okay, well that's sad because the world obviously is populated by both. Mm-hmm. In your trainings, you do workshops with Kavya and all that. How do you work through this issue of empathy, whether it's a gendered one or whether it's about understanding different cultures and intercultural understanding? Do you work on those issues in your workshops?
Yes, for our workshops, we have creative writing workshops, we have essay writing workshops, we have poem writing, or even poem recital and short story reading events. We have all those. So in our workshop, let's say when we are writing about essays, we'll ask each writer, each participant to come up with their own idea. We do a brainstorming session, inputs, we have a discussion, and then they come up with their essays. Mm-hmm. So it works in different ways.
Did you go through a process of going to workshops?
Yeah.
And then what were your main takeaways from some of these workshops?
Like the writing techniques, there were a lot of different writing techniques. Some writers use different techniques, like, okay, you can just write from experience. Some people say you have to do a draft. Some people say you don't have to do a draft. Just like I tried both ways. And then experimenting. Writing is all about experimenting. You write and then you see, okay, next thing you don't like it, you just delete it and write another one. So when I went to Udaya's one, it was like a whole different experience for me. I did know most of the techniques like by now, but what I like about his workshops, especially the reading part, was to expose myself on stage. Like when I'm reading, different skills of reading. It's like, how do I throw my voice out? How do I perform? It's like reading on stage is about performing. It's not very easy because the first time I went there, I was like shaking.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, all of us get a bit of stage fright when forced to confront the public. Now, mm-hmm. we're going to be coming back to look at the question of why write in the national language, why not English, which is much more global with a huge market. Mm-hmm. That's the subject for our next segment. Stay tuned. Let's talk with me, Sharad Kutin. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tanusha Sranmuganathan. She's a novelist and member of the Kavyan Group. And the founder is here as well, Uthaya Sankar SP, also a well-known writer. He's been on television. He's done so many things. His CV runs for miles. Now, we're going to be talking about the Indian diaspora now. Because, you know, us who are of Indian origin all come from what is a global migration of people around the subcontinent, right? So what you have, you have Pakistan, you have Nepal, you have Bangladesh, Bhutan, all these countries constituting the South Asian continent or subcontinent. Now, many of the experiences of the people from these countries, Pakistan, India in particular, have been popularized in the English language. And many of us have read it, you know, even from Sri Lanka, we have Shyam Salvadori, Michael Adanje, and the Indian writers, any number, Arundhati Roy, to whoever. Mm-hmm. The question is, you know, with using English, you can reach a global audience. Uthaya, mm-hmm. why limit yourself to the Malay language?
That's a tough question, actually. I consciously decided to write in Bahasa Malaysia because since I was a child, I wanted to tell stories in Bahasa Malaysia for the Malaysian community. Of course, I also write in English. I do talks in English. But you see, even when I go to Indonesia, Singapore, for reading events, I would have my translated work in English, but they'll tell me, please, we want to hear it in Bahasa Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So there is...
Oh, you do translate your works?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so again, before I let you go and off the hook, Why write in Malay when it's a much more limited market? You could write in English and really, you know, I mean, potentially go places.
Of course, that decision was made since I was a child, as I mentioned earlier.
But decisions can be changed, no?
Yeah, exactly. But you see, if you look at major works internationally, many were written in their regional languages, some in mother tongue, and later translated, award-winning stories or novels are originally written in their mother tongue.
Except the Indian writers in English write in their native tongue, which is English. Mm-hmm. English is the native tongue of many Indians in India or in Pakistan.
Bahasa Malaysia mm-hmm. is my mother tongue.
Oh, so yeah. Bahasa Malaysia is your mother tongue. I mean, you are a bilingual writer. You also write in English. What's for you? What is the consideration for you when it comes to choosing, at least in the first draft, the language that you use?
Okay, I did start out writing when I was younger in English, some poems, some short stories and all. And then I actually have a novel, which I've already completed in English, but I'm kind of like tweaking it here and there. Like, eventually I'm planning to publish it, but then somehow I discovered writing in Malay was like a much more, I don't know, a funner thing to do.
It's like, it was more fun.
Yeah.
Oh, like, okay.
So hey, but for the record, my thinking process is entirely English. All the dialogues that I write in Bahasa Malaysia, it appears here in English.
Yeah.
And I automatically translate it to Bahasa Malaysia.
So is your expressive language then English rather than Malay?
My thinking is in English, but my writing is in Bahasa Malaysia.
Yeah. Yeah. So I kind of agree with that.
So is something lost when you translate the thoughts, your English thoughts, into Bahasa? You know, I try to read some of your writings in Bahasa Malaysia. I must admit, it's of a register too high for me. Right?
Too high. I'm using the most simple Bahasa Malaysia.
Yeah, well, that's what you think. But the point is this. Is something lost when you do that translation in your head? I mean, the idiomatic expression, the idiomatic substratum of Malay, is that gone because you're doing the translation?
No, because you see, it's not direct translation. My thinking process is in English, and especially if I'm writing about Indian culture, it's non-English culture, and it works perfectly well.
Yes.
So since it's done the Indian culture thinking process in English, it's written in Bahasa, it's gone through editorial board.
Okay, but okay. So Tanusha said something really interesting. She said it's more fun to write in Malay, and I think for a writer, writing a language that you enjoy, that gives you pleasure, must be tremendous. Why is Bahasa Malaysia more fun than English?
Because it's simple. Like English, there are so many words that you have to use. Like there are 10 words that actually mean different things. Like one word means different things. Like and Malay is like, okay, there are only a few words that have similar meanings. So, you know, I don't have a problem choosing the best word in Malay, like compared if I'm writing in English, I'm like, no, this is not the correct word. I have to use another word. So it's like, kind of like, always have to debate with myself. And what Uday was saying, like, you know, when he taught his thought process in English, mine goes in English, Tamil, Malay, everything's inside. So it's like, when I sleep, kind of like, it's a subconsciously...
You dream in multiple languages,
yes,
do you?
Exactly. Kind of like somehow, lucky. When I wake up, the stories are continuous, it's continuous, continuous. So that's how I kind of get my ideas, and I keep, like, I go to the laptop or my phone, I'm like typing out, like, everything.
So okay, like, I'm so fascinated. Yeah. Is Malay fun for you as a language? Is it something that you take lots of pleasure from, writing and expressing yourself in the Malay language?
You see, when I conduct workshops, I conducted it either in English, Bahasa Malaysia, or fully in Tamil. And when I speak in Tamil, people tend to think that I'm from a Tamil school. And they say, okay, can we read your Tamil books? I say, no, I don't write in Tamil. Of course, it gets translated. I naturally speak in Bahasa Malaysia, you see? So maybe that's why.
You speak naturally in Bahasa, it's a default mode for you that writing in it comes more naturally. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe that's the answer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, in the remaining minutes that we have, I know you both brought a bunch. It's so prolific. Look at these people. They're so young. I mean, Tanusha, I don't know what, but you're kind of just above 30. And you have a whole stack of books there. Could you tell me, without promoting your own book, I mean, why, if I want to read something in Malay that, about the Indian experience, what would you recommend?
My very first novel.
Your very first novel, okay.
Okay, this is Tak Sengaja Cinta, which was just written in 2014.
It's a bit of a Mills and Boons front cover there.
Okay, the cover, okay, probably, but then the contents, you find it's not just a romance novel. There are thriller elements. I'm a huge fan of CSI, so it's kind of like include some murder stuff and blood and whatever.
Okay, blood and murder is always good for me. I always want a violence rating in anything I watch or read. Uday, what would you recommend?
Wow. For kids. You can put in number on besar. I mean, start them young. Stories in Bahasa Malaysia, which talks about... See, we always talk about unity, understanding each other. So it all goes into this fiction where people live in harmony. I go back to my childhood days where we did not have the racist elements. We could sit together, play together, eat together without worrying about halal and non-halal. So all those things come in my stories for children.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. I've been speaking to Uday Sankar SB. He's a writer and the founder member of Kavian, a group that promotes writing in the national language in Bahasa Malaysia, and also Tanusha Shanmugarnathan, She's a novelist, and she's just shown you a stack of her novels. And if you want to read, this is her book, Tak Sengaja Cinta. I don't know if anybody Tak Sengaja Cinta. She's kind of an act of agency. Anyway, it's been a wonderful evening. Remember, we're here every night at 10 p.m. It's Let's Talk with me, Sharad Pitton, only on Astro One.